Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
It's Monday, 5 September. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Nikunza from Sanlam Private Wealth. I want to touch on the opportunity and dollar strength, or our weakness, maybe. Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress on Results, and Isaac Odendahl. He's from Old Mutual. European energy crisis, an implication for stock markets. I tell you, Europe is looking ugly this morning. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Department of Transport set to increase driving license validity period. Currently 5 years. They're looking to maybe make it 8 or even 10 years. Business Day. Fund managers defend holdings of Russian carbon bonds. At least 5 SA companies are invested in some fossil fuel companies out of Russia. Suppose it's that old story, right? Profits versus morals. Are you there to make money, or are you there to be moral about it? Morning markets, US is red on Friday, S&P down 1.1, NASDAQ off 1.4%, and the US is closed today for Labor Day. Asia is mixed, Sydney up 0.1, Tokyo down 0.1, commodities mostly a little green, tiny bit, gold 1,723. Brent, 94.58. Platinum, 819. And palladium, 2,028, which is the little bit of red. Rand, 17.37. Top 40 opening call, not as ugly as when I got up earlier. It was looking for 900 points down. Now it's 680 points to the red, 1.1%. That, as 10 cent trades, down 3.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nick Kunz, the Senior Portfolio Manager, Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. Looking, I said in the intro there, looking quite ugly out there. And the question to which I was going to be posing to you was, we're seeing dollar index at 20-year highs. Does that, and therefore ZAR weakness, does it create some opportunity to the JSE because of our commodity / offshore bend? Or is it a case of looking at the markets this morning? Not really.
Morning, Simon. Yeah, very interesting looking screens this morning, and almost the tale of two different markets. I mean, what's happening in Europe, and then the S&P's, you know, slightly higher. So so opportunities. Look, this dollar's been on a charge. I mean, the King Dollar, I've seen quoted a few times, 110 this morning. I mean, that is a two-decade high. On the face of it, you know, a stronger dollar typically is not good for emerging markets. I mean, that's the broad base case. You know, that's because of, you know, capital flows, you know, flights of capital away from, you know, assets, emerging market assets back into dollars is typically not good. And things, and obviously a lot of emerging markets tend to have, you know, dollar denominated debt. So if not the space. I suppose to a certain extent there are pros and cons, right? I mean, Rand hedges tend to typically do reasonably well. You mentioned the miners, that's spot on. I mean, Sasol, Glencore, BHP, Anglo American should typically do better too, but then that'll be offset, I guess, by the problem as foreign flows head out. So it's a little bit of a balancing act, 601 half it on the other. I'm sorry, I haven't got a definitive answer, but on the actual face of it, a stronger dollar is not great for EM.
I suppose it is that point. I posed the question with broad strokes in a sense. You've got to go and dig down, as you say. Sure, Sasol going to love it, but a whole bunch of others aren't. And I take your point. The dollar is strong because money is rushing into the US because investors are scared of the rest of the world.
Yeah, you know, you get two types of sort of risk-off scenarios. You get your sort of flight to quality, which is typically out of equities into fixed income, into bonds, your typical safe haven statuses. I mean, back in the day, people used to buy gold. I don't know what's going on there. And then you get the real extreme case, which is your sort of flight to cash. And that's when bonds sold off, equities get sold off, and investors dive directly straight back into the US dollar. And I think that's what we're seeing now. But as I said on the intro, it's a bit of a tale of two different markets. US sort of being okay, whereas Europe you can't touch right now. So it's very tricky at the moment, Simon.
Yeah, it is tricky out there. I suppose the key point perhaps for a Monday morning is be careful. It's going to be a wild Monday. And as I said, US is closed, so it might be wild and a little bit quieter. We'll leave it there. Nick Kunze, Senior Portfolio Manager at Sanlam Private Wealth. Appreciate the early morning. And that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. US dollar index, 20-year highs, potential impact on the JSE. Nick says, pick your stocks rather than think of it as a broad stroke. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
If seagulls were hardy-dars who could afford to retire to the coast, what kind of bird would you be? Would you soar over the savannah or chase summer around the globe? You see, even when you stop working, your money won't. When you invest in Stanlib's fixed income funds, you can retire earning a regular income off your investments. Invest for more certainty at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib is an authorized financial services provider and a registered manager.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Trading now with Stephen Branch, CEO of Fortress REIT. Results were out for the end year-end June. Stephen, appreciate the early morning time. Before I dig into to results, quick touch on the share structure. Resolution was not passed at the AGM. You are engaging the JSE around REIT status. I suppose to a fair degree for you and your board, kind of out of your hands at this point. It's going to see what the JSE has to say.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning, Simon. It was obviously disappointing putting something to shareholders that didn't get passed, but we knew the threshold was quite high, needing 75% of both the A and B class shares to vote for it. So it is disappointing. Unfortunately, where we are now is the board doesn't have the authority to pay a dividend in the situation, and we therefore can't comply with the JSE listings requirements. So come the end of October, we would need to have some plan in place, but we can't comply, nor do we want to breach the listings requirements. So we are where we are, and it looks like that's probably the base case at the moment.
And the comply is around REIT status. It's not about getting off the JSE. It's just around the REIT status.
Absolutely. The REIT status, I think, it has seemed to confuse some people. It's really a tax dispensation between us and the shareholders. So if we're not a REIT, the company pays tax, and actually, with our NEPI exempt dividend income, becomes quite an efficient taxpayer as a real estate investment company, as opposed to being a REIT where the shareholders pay the tax.
Gotcha. I hadn't thought of that. Okay, moving on to results. Overall portfolio vacancy down at 5.4%. A year ago, it was 7.4%. Your mid-year was 6.5%. The trend is quite strong. How much you've been selling some assets, although fairly small disposals, about $500 million. This just to me suggests that your move into logistics certainly paying off strongly, and I suppose a moving out of the pandemic and a getting back to normal.
It definitely feels like it's a bit more back to normal in actually all of our portfolios, even our office portfolio. There's a little bit more of an uptick. So the highlight for us this year was definitely that 1% by value for our logistics portfolio being vacant. I mean, that's the lowest we've seen it ever. So that's definitely allowing us, I hope, in time to start to be a little bit pickier on the asking rentals and start to push those rentals up a little bit, which we haven't seen for a long time. We've been living in a world of negative reversions, and now hopefully we can start to get some rental growth.
Okay, there you are. And because 1% is almost, it's probably never get to 100. You're adding capacity, 100,000, just over 100,000 square meters of logistics space. You're building out that pick and pay distribution center, which is going to be absolutely giant. How are construction costs in terms of, I mean, I would imagine them higher. Are they meaningful for you? Is it something that you're passing on to the clients?
So it's definitely something that is, I guess, a concern for us, because we also don't want to pass on higher rentals to our tenants because that impacts their business. Construction costs, we're stuck round about a hard construction cost at a 4,500 rand for about 5 years, and that's shot up now to 7,500.
Wow.
So it's been a 40-50% increase, which is it's really, it's been marked over the last 12 months. So what we do with that is we often agree set yields with tenants up front, so they would pick up that higher cost in their rental. A few we haven't done that, and we've then tried to just see how we can mitigate it with our with our suppliers. But the, I guess the silver lining on that is that, you know, as I mentioned, rentals and construction costs were stuck at, in Gauteng, 60 to 65 rand a square meter for ages. And now that seems to be 75 to 80 rand asking all of a sudden. So there's been a big jump up in asking rentals for the new logistics boxes, which is positive, I think, for our existing income-producing portfolio.
Yeah, and of course, that construction cost is a, it's a one-off upfront, and then you earn off the building over the life of the building. You're continuing expansion Central and Eastern Europe. I don't want to say it's not aggressive expansion, but certainly you're buying, you're building, you're growing in that area, and you are in that space focusing logistics as well, which is very much the core focus back home here in South Africa as well.
Yeah, in Central and Eastern Europe, obviously, with our retail and logistics focus, we've got the shares in Nepi Rockcastle, 23.6%, that that we like to hold for retail exposure to that area, and they're experts, so I don't think we have any need to do it ourselves. And then logistics, we thought, let's go direct. And we started that about 2 years ago, bought those assets just as we were coming out of the pandemic in 2020. And the price appreciation there has been unbelievable. I think this year, year on year, like for like, it was 13.6% increase in the value of that portfolio. But you're right, it remains quite small. And we've got two great development sites, and we'll need to see how those go before we put more money in there. It is quite a competitive market, but I think we've done quite well today.
And the impact of the war in Ukraine, you're not in Ukraine, but of course it's right next door. My sense from someone sitting thousands of miles away is that it kind of is isolated, and you might even be in a Poland or wherever the case is, but it's not at this point in the war directly impacting, apart from energy cost.
Yeah, absolutely. Energy costs, and I think the general inflation seems to be a little bit of a scare, but that's anywhere in the world at the moment.
Yeah.
The strange thing is, for Poland, it's now got, I think, roughly 36 million people and about 4 million Ukrainian immigrants have suddenly come across, at 10% of the population. And in general, I think the Poles are looking at it quite favorably. They had, you know, they were struggling for labor. So I think it might actually be, in the medium term, you know, disregarding the human suffering and the tragedy, actually a benefit for Poland's economy.
Yeah, and that's some of the perversions of war. I mean, the weird stuff happens when war's happening. Stephen Brown, CEO of Fortress REIT, really appreciate the early morning insights.
Your money knows it's not just about the money. It's about your returns, returning the favor, and empowering people. Your money can do more to change the narrative. Beyond delivering consistent returns, investing in the Stanlib Kanyisa Impact Investment Fund can help eradicate poverty and protect the environment. Invest for more impact at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Isaac Odendold, Mutual Wealth Investment Strategist. Isaac, appreciate the early morning. A note you put out last week, and you made the point upfront that a surge in oil price that we've seen over the last year, that this causes universal pain. No one escapes that. With oil back below 100, certainly helping many, we're going to see a nice petrol cut locally later this week. But Europe's still in a heap of pain in terms of energy.
Yeah. Good morning, Simon. Yeah, and it's getting worse because, of course, on Friday, Russia announced that it would be shutting off the Nord Stream pipeline indefinitely, supposedly because there is a technical fault, but we all know what's going on there. Yeah, so Europe is extremely exposed to very high and also very volatile natural gas prices. And the difference between oil and gas, which I think is useful to understand, is that because it's easy to ship oil, you can kind of replace one barrel of oil with another. Whereas the natural gas is expensive to ship. It's much cheaper to run these pipelines, and therefore there is no immediate alternative for European economies to the piped gas. I mean, they're trying to import as much gas as they can from the US and elsewhere, but just not been able to do so sufficiently. So you've seen prices spike to unimaginable levels. You've seen electricity prices, wholesale electricity prices, increase quite dramatically. That obviously puts the squeeze on consumers. It puts the squeeze on business. There are increased risks of rationing as we head into the winter months, you know, as South Africans know, load shedding.
Yeah.
And there are also some whole bunch of other problems, one of which is that a lot of the European utilities hedged some of the exposures. They're now facing increased margin calls on these hedges. So now it's becoming a financial issue as well. Mm. And there was talk over the weekend of governments having to step in and bail out some of those utilities to prevent, you know, problems escalating into the banking sector if those hedges, excuse me, can't be, or the collateral posted on those hedges, you know, can't be raised.
I hadn't even thought of that. And of course, the other challenge out there, I mean, we've been talking gas. This is, you know, to a fair degree, the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But there's drought, and there's drought in Europe, and this extends across to China as well. And the drought is a seasonal issue, but also perhaps a longer term issue, much like the gases, in the sense of global warming and climate change.
Yeah. So it's almost like everything's gone wrong there, because of course big reliance on hydroelectricity in many of those countries, and big, but low water levels can't produce enough hydroelectricity. You've seen the same thing in China, but also interestingly, some of the nuclear plants have not been able to run at full capacity because they rely on rivers mm-hmm. to cool them, especially sort of in the southern regions. So that's also something I don't think people really thought could happen, that you can't run your nuclear plant at full capacity because it's too hot.
Yeah.
I think the bottom line in all of this is that countries, governments, but also investors need to start thinking a lot more about energy security, which is something we've taken for granted over the last couple of years. I mean, in fact, in Germany, 2019, 2018, there were days when electricity prices turned negative. The sun shined so much and the wind blew so much that there's sort of abundance of renewable energy that wholesale electricity prices actually turned negative. So in that kind of environment, you think, well, you know, the gas is cheap and mm-hmm. the sunshine is free and, you know, that's good. And no one kind of thought or planned for this kind of environment where suddenly the gas has been cut off. You know, the nature doesn't play along. So it calls for a lot more investment in energy security, calls for more redundancy. And again, it's a theme of coming out of COVID where people are saying, well, you know, it's not all about efficiency anymore. It's now about resiliency, about having, you know, spare capacity in case something goes wrong. So it is a different environment that we appear to be moving into.
Yeah, much as the just-in-time supply chain was a victim of COVID, so is the plentiful energy. And does that, I mean, then looking at Europe, and I'm thinking Germany, for example, with a large industrial base, which of course uses power. I mean, that's going to, in the short term, it hurts them because the cost of the power, to your earlier point, but also potentially some opportunity, because of course if they're looking for that energy security, there's going to be some spending in that space, and that spending is somebody's income.
Absolutely, yeah. So I mean, so I think this is a long term investment opportunity, and I think the bigger the crisis, the more we need to think about how big is the opportunity. I think that's always a good mindset to have as an investor.
Mm-hmm.
And there might be different kinds of opportunities, and maybe the obvious one is to say, well, you need to invest in electricity production. Maybe that's not the best way to think about it. Maybe the best way to think about it is one of those German industrial companies that are now, you know, being sold off heavily because Europe is facing recession, but actually they're not as badly off as you might think at first glance. You know, so this is an opportunity for people to start digging underneath the hood and looking for those companies that are going to be more resilient in this kind of environment, because these crises tend to not affect everybody equally. But absolutely, I do think we're moving into an environment where there's going to be a lot more spending on energy security. That's going to create opportunities. I think South Africa can be a beneficiary as well.
Mm-hmm.
In the short term, because we are obviously a big coal producer, and that really has saved our bacon throughout this crisis. Mm-hmm. But in the longer term, obviously also because of our hydrogen potential, renewables, platinum, and we might even be, all we know, a big hydrocarbon producer. You know, we've seen big oil finds in Mozambique and Namibia, oil and gas, and there's every reason to believe that South Africa might also have some of those resources. So, and of course, I think the other point to make is that we are, as South Africans, are a lot more used to this kind of energy crisis, energy unstable environment. So I suppose we've also learned some lessons that they're only now starting to learn in Europe.
Yeah, I take your point. We're kind of centered up north there, but that, in the crisis, there often is opportunity. We'll leave it there. As I go, and old mutual wealth investment strategy, just appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Gary Boyson from Rand Swiss, listed property, local, global. We asked if you were investing into REITs. Over half of you said absolutely no chance. The rest was split fairly evenly between local and offshore. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.